kind of one of these new interventions. So hopefully, as people become aware that it's not necessary to come off of your mental health medications, and that we actually strongly encourage people to continue seeing their mental health professionals and their medical providers before, during, and after these sessions, so that our programs are designed to be complementary to somebody's already existing mental health program as another tool in their toolbox. So I'm hoping that this sparks a lot of conversations amongst providers and individuals to see if this might be a tool that could be helpful for them.
If our listeners are interested in knowing more, do you have any resources you'd recommend?
Yeah, so I think just visiting our website, bendabletherapy.org, is a great place to start. People can go on there and look at our research. They can like watch videos of people who have come through psilocybin sessions. They can read our bios. They can learn a little bit more in our FAQ about what psilocybin is and what it isn't. So, you know, hopefully people can get, go to our website and get a lot more information. Oh, and then one thing I did forget to mention that was kind of exciting about the study is that throughout the study, we had zero adverse events take place. So not only did we see that this was very effective at treating depression and anxiety, but it also had a high safety profile. So I think when you can come through a study and have zero reportable adverse events, that hopefully that gives people a sense of safety and security and thinking about that this may be a tool that they could use.
Well, Amanda, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for your interest and for covering this. We're really excited to be able to share this information.
That was Amanda Gao, Executive Director of Bendable Therapy, speaking with me about a new preliminary study from the nonprofit Psilocybin Service Center that demonstrates that psilocybin therapy significantly improves symptoms of depression and anxiety. You've been listening to KBOO News In Depth. I'm Althea.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
At KBOO, we accept many kinds of vehicle donations. We accept fuzzy vans, broken cars, zippy scooters, seaworthy boats, well-worn farm equipment, family-sized SUVs, old jet skis, and more. If your vehicle has a clean title, we can take it as a donation. If your vehicle isn't working, we can work with that too. Call our car donation experts at the Center for Car Donations to find out more info, ask questions, and support KBOO. Call 877-KBOO-123. That's 877-526-6123. Or go to our website, kboo.fm/vehicle.
Support for KBOO comes from our members and from the Urban League of Portland, celebrating its 80th anniversary as a local civil rights organization. Urban League PDX provides housing, education, healthcare, and career services to local communities. Membership information is available at ulpdx.org.
There's something missing and I'm lit and I got something to say. Oh yeah.
Good evening and welcome to Trans Positive. Tonight we'll be discussing some recent transgender related news. So first let's go around and introduce ourselves. I'm Nicolette and I use they, them pronouns.
My name is Emma, I use she and her pronouns.
I'm Sheila, unless the Gestapo is listening tonight. In that case, my name is Esmeralda.
And what are your pronouns?
Oh, she, her.
Okay. All right, so the first thing I want to discuss tonight is how Earlier in September, the Heritage Foundation urged the FBI to monitor and label trans people and allies as violent extremists and terrorists. They proposed the FBI add a new designation to its list of domestic violent extremist groups for what they call transgender ideology-inspired violent extremism, or TIVE. A release from the organization reads, quote, TIVE is based on the belief that violence is justified against those who do not share the radical views of transgender ideology. It has led to an increasing trend of TIVE domestic terrorist events across the country. The Heritage Foundation falsely claimed that violence from trans people and allies is increasing, citing recent shootings where the trans are, oh my God, citing recent shootings where the shooter may have been trans or may have been close to a trans person, such as the initial claim that Charlie Kirk Studer was trans, which was debunked, and now the rumor that he was romantically involved with a trans person or had a trans roommate, which still has not been confirmed, even though trans people still make up less than 1% of mass shooters and are statistically far more likely to be victims of violence than perpetrators. According to a September 18 report, two anonymous national security officials said the Bureau is discussing treating trans subjects as a subset of its new threat category, nihilistic violent extremists, or NVE, defined as, quote, criminal conduct in furtherance of political, social, or religious goals that derive primarily from a hatred of society at large and a desire to bring about its collapse by sowing indiscriminate chaos. Officials said that such a classification would give the Trump administration political and media cover as they escalate their anti-trans campaign. Now, I'd like to remind everyone that we've discussed Gregory Stanton's 10-step guide to a genocide multiple times on this show. And stage 8 is persecution, where victims are identified and separated out because of their identity. And in stage 7, preparation, leaders seek to indoctrinate the populace with fear of the victim group by telling them, if we don't kill them, they'll kill us, in order to disguise genocide as self-defense. And I also firmly believe trans allies are being included in this classification in order to try and isolate us from our cis allies and make them afraid to come to our defense. So do either of you have any thoughts on this you'd like to share?
Oh, yeah, I've got lots of things. I want to let Sheila go first.
Well, it's interesting that the language is used as though there is some sort of a massive study that has found these mega trends, and it sounds all very scientific. And of course, this is only one of various groups that have been put together as being nihilists or something like that, which again, that's sort of a philosophical term that says having no values. It's almost like they're trying, along with bringing back tariffs, to bring back the era when anarchists were running around in the early 1900s. And the thing that's odd today, though, and concerning, is that they're coming up with this definition as a stair step to, without any clear diagnostic criteria, to say exactly, is just being trans adequate to be an advocate of this violence? How close does the association have to be? Or is there any association whatsoever? Certainly for an average trans person, no trans person per se is in favor of violence to make our points. We'd rather have turned to professionals to define our experience. And the other thing is that when it's combined with this emphasis upon going to cities, shoving the police forces aside, and then federalizing local law enforcement, and then this big pep talk that took place before the military today, more or less having a little subtext that their primary function is not to go out and make war, they're too strong and big for that, but that their primary function is to address the enemy within, which again is very conspiratorial sounding, very the idea that somehow America is honeycombed by all these Antifa terrorist cells and Portman has been chosen as the poster child for that ridiculous fear. And so when you put the whole pattern together, especially along the lines of the way we've always done things in America, it's very alarming to not only our community, but to the survival of American values per se.
Yeah, I'd like to say a couple of things about this. I mean, first I'd like to say what's actually true about transgender people, and then we'll get to what's false about this propaganda. Transgender people have existed across history and across cultures. Trans people are not a new phenomena. The historical records show third gender and trans-like roles in Native American traditions, in Jewish traditions, in Hijra communities, in Samoa, and in the Balkans. Modern language might be newer, but the experiences of transgender people are ancient. Being transgender is not a mental illness. The medical and psychiatric consensus is that being transgender is a natural part of human identity. What causes distress is not being transgender, but gender dysphoria, the sense that your body or your social role and your identity are at odds with each other. This can be alleviated through affirmation and through support. Gender identity is real. Most people, their gender identity aligns with their sex assigned at birth. But for some people, transgender and non-binary, it doesn't. Studies in neuroscience, endocrinology, psychology, all show that gender identity has biological, developmental, and social components. It's not just a choice. Transgender people also face disproportionate harm. The truth about transgender people is that we face higher rates of violence, discrimination, unemployment, poverty, homelessness, and denial of health care. Transgender youth have much higher rates of depression, suicide, and attempts, but these rates drop dramatically when they receive affirmation, supportive care, and access to gender-affirming health care. Gender-affirming healthcare is effective and safe. Medical studies consistently show that hormone therapy, puberty blockers, and surgeries improve mental health outcomes. And regret rates for transgender surgery is extremely low, under 1%. And finally, transgender people contribute to society just like everybody else. Trans people are parents, they're clergy, scientists, students, parents, and workers. We're not only defined by being trans, it's just a small part of our entire life. So these are some of the positive things about transgender people that this propaganda is trying to erase. It's trying to redefine us, and I thought I would start by defining who we really are. So now let's talk about this propaganda. Transgender inspired violence extremism. It isn't recognized as a real category of either criminology or national security. It was created by a think tank, and so therefore it doesn't have any established place in reality. It's just somebody's idea. It's a classic propaganda pattern. Create a scary new word and then repeat it until it feels like it's real, even though it was never real. Cherry picking data, 50% of school shootings are trans related. That's just one example. In reality, fewer than a handful of perpetrators have ever been identified as trans out of hundreds of incidents. Propaganda tactic is to inflate numbers and make a small, isolated phenomena appear systemic and dangerous. That's what this is doing. That's why this is propaganda. TIVE is propaganda. Also redefining ordinary something ordinary as extreme. Support for gender-affirming care, use of pronouns, or even the idea that gender is not strictly binary, gets rebranded with some word, a fake word called transgender ideology, which is a fake word made up by people who simply want to use a propaganda tactic to pathologize everyday social movement and reframing it as an extremist threat. So every day people express lots of support for gender-affirming care. People don't have a big problem with chosen pronouns. And people don't generally have a problem with the idea that gender is not strictly binary. So the idea of labeling it as some kind of a pathology is actually the thing that's abnormal. That's the thing that's out of place with how most people feel comfortable going about their business. It's not a big deal for most people to make a little extra effort to be inclusive of transgender people. Fear-mongering through moral panic, this propaganda term, transgender-inspired violent extremism, tries to tie transgender people to terrorism, school shootings, violence, events that stoke public fear. We've seen this in the past. We saw the communist infiltration of the 1950s, and that was propaganda. Most communists were just people who supported progressive causes. And then there was the quote-unquote satanic ritual abuse in the 1980s. Some of us remember the satanic panic. It was propaganda and a lie and a made-up story that satanic ritual abuse was running rampant, and that this was something that we had to do something about. And then finally, the theory of critical race indoctrination, which is the ridiculous theory that somehow just trying to teach people about racism and about the reality of racism in American history and in American institutions reflects some kind of indoctrination. There's no indoctrination. Racism is real, and racism in institutions is real. This is just part of teaching American history. So these are propaganda tactics that have been used by far-right groups to delegitimize marginalized groups. And it's also about erasing reality. Instead of talking about who is harmed, it's replacing that with who harms. So evidence shows that transgender people are far, far, far more often victims of hate crimes and violence than perpetrators. The language of this propaganda term by the Heritage Foundation flips this, and it instead makes the fake claim that transgender people are aggressives instead of targets. Transgender people are most often targets of violence. It's a propaganda tactic by inverting the violence from the oppressed group onto them, by inverting the violence onto the oppressed group, it's a way that people who are trying to dominate will justify their oppression. It's basically another version of blame the victim. And finally, creating justification for policy action. This is another way in which the Heritage Foundation is engaged in acts of propaganda. By framing trans ideology as a national security threat, which everybody knows is ridiculous, proponents try to legitimize surveillance, bans, and rollbacks of rights. This isn't just descriptive language. It's, as Noam Chomsky says, it's manufacturing consent for repressive policies. It's a propaganda tactic. It's clear. Turned fear into permission for a government crackdown. In short, this is a fabricated threat. It misrepresents evidence. It weaponizes fear to justify stripping away rights from marginalized transgender people. It's not grounded in data. It's just a political strategy of the far right. So that's what I had to say about it.
That was wonderful. Well, some thoughts and commentary on this. Nicole, do you want to go first? Or?
Yeah. So what I do want to point out, I think this kind of ties into what Emma was talking about. I want to look at their wording real quick of these definitions that they gave of these classifications. Let's see, we talked about
what some of the others to show the breadth of the loop that they're trying to throw around any sort of dissent or critical awareness for their position. There, I think there were 8 categories or something.
Yeah. And I mean, we talked about what they mean by TIVE, which is basically like saying anything that supports trans people at all. They're calling TIVE. And then on top of that, I guess what the FBI is supposedly looking into doing themselves is classifying trans ideology under NVE. And that's, they defined it as criminal conduct in furtherance of political, social, or religious goals that derives primarily from a hatred of society at large and a desire to bring about its collapse by sowing indiscriminate chaos. Okay, so how do trans people fall under that? My thoughts are, do we hate society and want to sow chaos by, you know, being different than what society is telling us we're supposed to be? Is that how we're going to be thrown into that classification? Like, I'm just wondering what exactly they're going to consider, like, what exactly about trans people is going to fall under that? So do you have any thoughts about that?
Well, it's the same kind of thing that happened after World War I, where it was a fear of communism, and they had a group of things called the Palmer Raids in 1919, where, once again, there's periods where the nation, especially America, it seems like, goes into this period of reflexive panic, as though there's flying saucers. Remember the famous flying saucer thing when they did the radio broadcast, the War of the Worlds, and people thought it was real? Well, this is kind of in that same thing. And I don't know why Americans have this tendency to want to react in this fearful way. But whatever it is, it seems to also tie into gender identity disorders, fear that somehow or other this is contagious, that if we allow trans people to exist, other people will become trans. So it's like the old movie, The Invasion of the Body Snatchers. And so it's very 1950s flying saucers from Mars kind of approach. And the fact that they have no humor about this, that they can't see the ridiculousness of it, brings up some questions of tactics. What should our community do when we're faced with this kind of discrimination? And I would love to talk about the Stonewall riots and what was done then, what was done during the AIDS epidemic, when we had ACT UP doing certain things that would dramatize the ridiculousness of what's going on. And then there's a very important to remember that because they've gone after so many people and groups that might theoretically criticize their attempt to remake America in their own weirdo image, that we do have a lot of potential friends out there, so that we should ask ourselves how we fit into the larger resistance movement of people that say we want to protect free speech and we want to protect freedom of assembly. We want to follow all requisite laws about gatherings. And so I have after we talk more on the topic in general, I'd love to come up with some great thoughts maybe to how we can not have to deny ourselves, but not play into their narrative by when we protest become the only people in the crowd that are noticed and they're therefore are in any way validating their characterization of us as anarchists or as people that are de facto in rebellion as opposed to just simply living our lives?
So I'd like to try to answer your question to Nicolette. I mean, one of the things they think is they think that we're a political ideology. So they don't just think of us as individual people existing, but they think of us as a political ideology. And the fact that they think of us as an ideology allows them to compare us to other ideologies. I would say that the idea of trans liberation is probably an ideology. I mean, in the same way that like the civil rights movement was an ideology, or that the movement for gay rights is a movement for justice. So I mean, if a political ideology is a movement for justice and a movement for liberation, then, you know, then they're right. We are a movement for liberation. And I think it's really clear. We are a movement for liberation and they want to stop us. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I mean, we want to be liberated from the expectation that we have to live our lives in the gender binary and according to the rules that have existed for 10,000 years. For one thing, they haven't. There's always been a dominant system that we've existed within, but we've always been there. And we're emerging as something that is, we're trying to say, hey, we're part of the world and we're acceptable. And we want our rights as people. So in that way, it is, you know, it is an ideology, but it's a very, very good ideology. It's about, you know, it's part of the queer movement. We're part of the queer movement for liberation. Now, another thing that they believe, which is, this is the part where they kind of go off the rails. They believe that affirming gender leads to violence. And that's the part like where they're, I mean, this is not anything new. This is what happened to Jews. This is what's happened to every minority that's existed in this country. This happened to Asian Americans. It's happened to African Americans. It's happened to newly arrived immigrants. It's happening right now to brown people. You know, they're taking a minority of the group, an extreme minority in our case. I mean, there was one person who did have some transgender experience who committed really horrible acts. And they're using those two people to paint a broad picture about 3 million people, basically. I mean, even more if you count non-binary folks. You know, they're trying to say that what two people did basically defines 3 million people. And that's ridiculous. I mean, we know that we see it every day. It's like every week there's more and more mass shooters popping up. I mean, in the last week of September, there were like three mass shooters, and they were all white male Republicans. You know, they think that institutions are radicalizing kids, and that's not true. But what is happening in schools is that we're making room for the acknowledgement of transgender kids. And we're making room for the acknowledgement that there are, you know, that there is gender identity is diverse. And that's what they're reacting against. I mean, everything that they're reacting against, Nicolette, and part of the reason that they're making this fake propaganda term up is because we've made progress, you know? We've made progress. We've acknowledged that there's transgender people and that there's gender variance. And they're afraid of that so much that they want to go after these really old tools to try to take away our rights. And, you know, that's what they're doing. So that's what I have to say.
Thank you, Emma. I really appreciate that. And I think at this point, this kind of begs the question of what can we do, us trans people and our allies, what can we do to combat this systemic persecution, in particular this FBI potential classification. How do you think we should respond to this?
Well, I mean, I think
I would love to talk about that.
Okay, why don't you go first, Sheila?
Here's what I think. I'm looking at what they're doing and the tactics that they are choosing, because one of the things that I've noticed in LGBT, so let's go back in history to the beginning of the LGBT movement. It started, of course, at Stonewall in 1969. And at the time, what happened was it was a sudden outburst of energy. It was the night that Judy Garland died, and it was just a night where people didn't feel like being pushed around. And what I enjoyed about it was there was humor mixed in. One of the things they did was some of the drag queens formed a chorus line and sang the song, "We are the Stonewall Girls. We wear our hair in curls. We wear our dungarees above our Nelly knees." And in San Francisco at the Compton protests, Jose Faria was at the Black Cat, which was a gay bar in San Francisco. They made an effort also to end each night before they closed the place by singing "God Bless Our Nelly Queens." And I just think that it's we've always had a sense of humor about ourselves, and that is part of our strength. Now, these people take themselves deadly seriously, and this business of characterizing what's going on in Portland as some sort of a warfare compared to literally the way Europe looked after the Second World War, which appeared in Trump's speech tonight before all these generals, that this is this whole thing is insurrections and is all this terrible stuff is going on. And for people that only watch selective news services, they believe this. They can't believe that people could be this blatant in their lying. So this is a couple of thoughts I've had. One of the things is that these ICE facility is located in one specific part, very close to the river down there in Portland. And so far there's been a lot of protests there. When we protest, somehow we will be seen as leaders or as instigators, and that worries me a little bit. So I've had another thought, and this is not a actual recommendation. I'm brainstorming here. But one of the things that occurred to me is the important thing is as long as they stay in their little cocoon, we don't care that they're there. We know there's a nice facility there. Nobody objects to their having that. The only time it's a problem is when they come out on these various raids and they go to schools to try to have parents that are picking up their children to try to arrest people. They've said that they have a right to invade liturgical services at churches and synagogues if they feel that there's somebody hiding there. So my thought is the most effective way to resist this stuff, number one, is don't act up. Don't meet their criteria. Don't let them get any kind of footage off of us. But when they do outrageous things, if they beat anybody up, if they throw anybody down on the ground, if they do any of the things that look bad, everybody that's at a protest or just on the street that notices it should get their cell phones out and record every single bit of it so that they can't have this anonymity that they're craving with their masks and refusal to have badge numbers and things like that. The other thing that we can do is be in the part of the city where they aren't, where there isn't a problem. If we do have some little protest, it's good if we do need a permit to make sure we always get it. But if we don't need a permit, anytime a group that wants to gather together in a peaceful fashion and do something that is maybe even humorous, maybe even just talk on a street corner and just say, "How do you feel about this? What's it like being in Putin's Russia, where we can't even be secure in our own persons and our own churches and our own schools and at Walmart because we're afraid that we're going to have we're going to have to witness some terrible arresting process with crying children as their parents are hauled away, or some of these horrible things that are happening. My thought is, don't play into their narrative, make them play into ours. And that's exactly why ACT UP was so effective, because they chose their actions very clearly. They knew exactly what they were going to do. They made it really clear that to not acknowledge AIDS was to condemn us to death. And that was something that they wanted to get the word out. And it's funny, when people are very serious and they can't see the humor of their own folly, humor is the most effective thing, and the truth is very effective. And being just a human being in the face of their non-human, just how they appear, this kind of lizard people that are all gathered up in all these armor and all this. And if they are going to start bringing heavy vehicles, Trump has given them the permission to use all necessary force, which presumably includes shooting civilians. Who knows what that includes? All necessary force? Who's to say the borders of necessity? So things could get really hot, and what I personally believe is that they're doing this because they want to get us used to the idea of having the military on the street where they do not belong. And that's, if they can do it starting now, next year, when the votes are coming up, if there's anything that they feel they're losing the election, they're already getting us used to the idea, so that we won't be surprised if we see tanks on street corners. We won't be surprised about that. And the fact that this, according to the testimony today at this mega, mega thing with 800 of the top brass flowing in at great expense all around the world to hear this pep talk and told that it's the enemy within we have to fear, and they don't even want to get us too involved in exterior wars, but they say, let's get about the enemy within. Well, that includes us. So it's very imperative that we find a way to explain to everyday people that we're not the problem, and we're not violent people. We're just everyday folks that live amongst them on a daily basis. And so are all the brown people and everybody else that they have also defined as enemies and are trying to get rid of. One of the things that was really stupid today is that apparently there's a prohibition against growing beards, and sometimes people have shave every day. It's extremely irritating to their skin, and that tends to be disproportionately black members of the service. And it's a way of trying to say to black people, we don't want you in the services anymore. All these types of behavior are the things that are their vulnerability. So we need to make them have to pay a price for that blindness from which they're suffering.
Great. So we've got another guest with us, Jeremy.
Hello.
Jeremy, welcome. Welcome to the show. And would you like to comment?
Yes, absolutely. I think there is a lot of merit to passive resistance. Obviously, it's worked throughout history to a certain degree. But I feel like because of the aggression and because of the nature of these organizations, the reason that they're here isn't just to passively sit in their facility, it's to go out and kidnap people off the streets. Like, I know that it's feeding into a narrative that that's what they want. I think the end game for Trump is martial law. I think that's what he wants in the end. Like, he's not trying to hide it either. It's just like, yeah, I agree. It's him trying to get us used to having troops on the street. It's to get people so used to all this outlandishness that it just becomes numbing in a way. But I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. I think that there's, I don't know. It's very scary. Everything's very scary. everything's so huge and it feels like overwhelming. It feels like if you make the wrong step, it's just going to make things worse. But something has to be done. So I don't know.
So I'd like to say a few things in response to your question, Nicolette, about what can be done. I think that in line with what both Sheila and Jeremy are saying, I think that we need to challenge the false framing directly. You know, so we need to reclaim the narrative. We need to keep repeating that transgender people and non-binary people are far more often victims of violence than perpetrators. We need to demand evidence when they say false things. Just like, I mean, I know we're talking both about how can we support and affirm trans people and move forward, but we also ended up inserting into this, how can we resist the militarization of Portland that's happening right now? And I think the answer to both is the same thing. I mean, as we've seen over and over again with regard to the false claims regarding the militarization of Portland, there is no war happening in Portland. There is no threat. There is no danger. Not only are the actions of the president unconstitutional, but they're completely unmerited on the basis of the president's own claims. So, and everybody's been saying that. And so it's really clear that this is a propaganda war. And eventually we'll win the propaganda war because we have the facts on our side. It's also important for both the trans movement and with regard to this issue of resisting militarization to build broad coalitions. We need to partner with other allied groups like civil rights groups, the ACLU, Lambda Legal, NAACP, immigrants' rights groups, faith-based groups. This isn't just an issue of trans rights, and it's not just an issue of resisting militarization in Portland. This is a fundamental civil liberties issue. And with both of these, it's really a constitutional issue. If the government can invent a new extremism category to criminalize gender identity, and if they can make up completely fake claims about things that are not happening in Portland in order to justify military occupation, then the way to resist that is by building broad coalitions and showing that not only are these claims not true, but there is popular resistance against it. And this is an important part of nonviolence. It's actually a really important principle of nonviolence. I mean, you have to challenge your oppressor. Now, here on KBOO, we will never advocate for property violence or any kind of violence. We don't do that because we're a nonprofit and because that's not part of our charter. So on this show, there may be other people who talk about it different ways, but at least when I'm talking about it on the show, I'm talking about it from the perspective of nonviolence, which is very active. It is about putting your body in the way of the tanks and saying, no, we're not going to let your tank roll over our street. We're going to sit in front of you and stop you. It's also important to support legal and constitutional advocacy. I mean, we have to work with the law as much as we can. I mean, we need to work with legal advocates who support our First Amendment rights, who support our constitutional rights, and who understand the vulnerabilities that transgender people experience, and who are willing to go to the courts and engage in the long struggle that's happening in the courts right now for the rights of trans kids, for the rights of trans adults, and, you know, for everything that we need to do to resist this avalanche of legislation that's been passed in mostly red states directed against us. There's two more things I think we can do that are really important. One is what we're doing right here at KBOO, which is public education and media strategy. It's really important that we share our stories as much as possible, not only here on KBOO, but we need to share our stories on TikTok, on Facebook, on Blue Sky, everywhere we go, or on Snapchat, any place we go and communicate about who we are We need to share our stories, and we need to debunk the myth of transgender violence. We need to show real stories of transgender people, parents, students, workers. We need to humanize and undermine the idea that we're a threat, because we're not. We're just your neighbors. We need to expose the origin of this propaganda, both when it comes to transgender people and when it comes to the militarization of Portland. And the very last thing I wanted to say was that it's also important to build international solidarity. I mean, this isn't just a struggle here in the United States. The struggle against fascism and the struggle for transgender rights is an international struggle. And we need to work with organizations and support causes around the world where transgender people are in jeopardy and where people are under the direct threat of fascism. So those are some of my ideas about how we can resist, Nicolette.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. And I understand that this is such a nuanced conversation when we're basically looking at needing to achieve a very delicate balance of making sure that we protect ourselves, making sure that we put out this act of resistance, as you've been talking about, but also making sure that we don't make ourselves appear to be a threat. It does make it difficult to know where exactly the line is that we need to toe. So I really appreciate everyone sharing their thoughts. This is going to be such a difficult issue going forward that I don't doubt is only going to escalate. And so that's why it's so important for us to talk about what we can do to prevent further persecution. So does anyone else have any thoughts on this issue at all?
I have some more detail on what we can do to protect ourselves while we're protesting. One of the things is to know at the beginning of the protest exactly who you're going with, what your intent is, and how far you're willing to take it. The cases where people have not minded getting arrested or like lying down on the street and going limp, so it's very hard to take you away. All those things are a way of discommoding the oppressive force. But question, is this a typical situation like that? There have been certain norms that law enforcement, because they are identifiable and they are aware that they can be sued if they are overly rough or do not adhere to certain standards, we have seen the kind of behavior that ICE has done around the country. And the question is, are they going to be curtailed? Do they have the same loyalty to the community that local law enforcement does? And the answer I suggest is that's unlikely. So there may be certain techniques that work when you're protesting something at the local level. When you're dealing with a force that is coming from the federal government that is not responsive to community needs and in fact is defying the will of the governor and the expressed assurances of the mayor that there is no need for them to be here, that they are not welcome, that they are not following the proper procedures. That tells me something about how careful we need to be, and techniques that would work under other circumstances will not necessarily work this time around. So my thought is, don't put yourself in a position where you're likely to get arrested, beaten up, tear gassed, injured in any way whatsoever, or shot if they go completely ape, as it happened at Kent State back in the 1960s. We don't know how far they're willing to carry this thing. So my thought is, make sure that you don't just disappear if you are arrested. Who knows where you'll pop up again? There's all kinds of questions that are not answered at this time. And since this is all de novo, we've never ever had anything like this in this country as what they're doing right now, let alone if they're announcing it and plan to do it in city after city after city. In some ways, we're the guinea pig. We're the first little cow out of the gate. And what happens in Portland is going to set the tone for what we do as a nation to resist this type of behavior. And we want to make sure that we don't be get trodden underfoot in the process.
So I just want to provide a little counterbalance to that, Sheila, just because I've been pretty engaged in conversations with folks who are down there protesting. And I think that, I mean, I understand what you're saying, and I think that's really important. I also think it's important if people do feel so moved. One of the things people did was they went down and they created a makeshift memorial out of flowers as a way of remembering the people who have been disappeared here in Portland and around the country from ICE. There was an interfaith march from the federal building to the ICE headquarters just last week. 500 people participated in that. I mean, if you feel moved to go down there and to peacefully and nonviolently, you know, express your First Amendment right to protest the abduction of human beings off the street, then you need to do in order to safely and nonviolently express your First Amendment rights. And I don't think that the government should make you afraid of that. I mean, there's been examples where the government has come after people here in Portland. I mean, I was at, there was like 26 people arrested over the course of a couple months, and I went to their hearing a couple of months ago, and most of them got fines. I mean, the fines weren't very, they weren't easy fines. They were like $500 fines for some of the things they did. They were probably things that you would normally consider to be a misdemeanor, but they were given violation notices. And, you know, those people are exercising their First Amendment rights. I mean, one of them was arrested for dumping rotten vegetables in front of the ICE headquarters, and they were arrested for littering. Unfortunately, we are out of time, so we're not going to be able to do a lot of back and forth on this, but I do really want to thank everyone so much for joining us. Jeremy, thank you so much for joining us, and Sheila, thank you again so much for all of your wisdom and all of the great things you have to say. Nicolette, thank you so much for hosting the show tonight and bringing up this great topic.
Thank you so much. I absolutely agree with the nonviolent part.
Yeah, well, thank you for joining it all, Jeremy, and thank you for everyone who came tonight. I think that we all brought some great ideas to the table about the situation and how to respond to it. And I do definitely want to emphasize that, like Emma brought up, the best thing we can do in addition to nonviolent resistance is just build alliances. Because, I mean, you know, we've been talking about how this is part of the transgenocide, but what's always recommended for genocide prevention is building alliances. We need to have people who are willing to defend us because there aren't enough of us to defend ourselves. And that's part of why we do this here at KBOO and educate people about what's going on and who trans people really are and why, you know, we're not a threat and we need protection just as much as anyone else does. Is so that we can build these alliances. We can find people who understand us and are willing to.
Well, thanks again for joining us tonight, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Thank you, everyone. Stay safe out there. Mm-hmm. Good night.
You're listening to Transpositive on KBOO Community Radio. We've just finished a powerful and important conversation about supporting transgender rights and breaking down harmful myths, including the false idea that transgender people are violent. Before we wrap up today's show, I'd like to take a few minutes to leave us on a hopeful note and celebrate the beauty, joy, and resilience that lives in our community every single day. When we talk about trans lives, it's easy for the focus to fall only on the challenges, discrimination, misinformation, and the daily work of pushing for equality. But those struggles are not the full story.
Trans people are also thriving, innovating, creating art, raising families, excelling in sports, leading movements, and bringing joy into the world. Our lives are not defined by obstacles but by the fullness of human experience. Think about it, trans joy is everywhere. It's in the teenager who smiles because they finally see themselves reflected in a book or on a screen. It's in the middle-aged person who comes out later in life and feels, maybe for the very first time, the deep relief of living authentically. It's in the friend who bakes you a cake and writes your true name and icing across the top. It's in laughter at community gatherings, in dance floors where we move without fear, and in the quiet moments of peace when someone looks in the mirror and finally recognizes themselves. We should also remember that the trans community is not just surviving, it's contributing. Transgender people are scientists, doctors, engineers, activists, artists, and musicians. We are neighbors planting community gardens. We are volunteers teaching literacy. We are leaders in classrooms and in local government. And we are storytellers, reminding the world of the simple truth that everyone deserves to be who they are, without apology. And allies, you matter too. Every time someone speaks up against misinformation, every time someone respects pronouns, every time a workplace updates its policies to be more inclusive, that's a step forward. Small actions add up. The more we normalize respect and compassion, the more room there is for joy. The myth that trans people are dangerous only lasts as long as people stay silent. When allies speak truth, myths lose their power. There's also something so powerful about the resilience of trans history. For centuries, gender-diverse people have existed in cultures all over the world. From Two-Spirit traditions among indigenous nations here on Turtle Island, to Hitra communities in South Asia, to Fa'afafin in Samoa, the idea of only two rigid genders has never told the full story of humanity. Trans people have always been here, and we will continue to be here. That continuity, that survival, is a form of joy in itself. So as you leave today's program, I invite you to take a moment to reflect, where do you see trans joy in your life? Maybe it's a friend who's thriving. Maybe it's a story in the news about progress. Maybe it's simply knowing that authenticity is powerful, and it's happening all around us. We can carry that joy with us as a reminder that every step forward, no matter how small, matters. And most of all, let's remember this, we are more than myths, more than misconceptions, more than statistics. We are full human beings. We are storytellers, builders, and dreamers. And when we create space for trans lives to flourish, we create a more compassionate, more inclusive, more vibrant world for everyone. This has been Trans Positive on KBOO Community Radio. Thank you for listening, thank you for your solidarity, and thank you for believing in a future where trans joy is not the exception, but the norm.
One.
Transgender people don't live here.
I've never met anyone who's transgender.
I swear I don't know someone who's transgender.
Transgender and non-binary people like me hear this all the time.
But according to the HRC Foundation, there are more than 2 million transgender people in the United States.
We live in every community across this country.
You might be surprised to hear that there are more transgender and non-binary people in the United States than there are
Starbucks, McDonald's, and Walmart locations combined.
In fact, if you put us all together,
there'd be more non-binary and transgender folks than the populations of DC,
or Nebraska,
or Maine,
or Idaho,
or West Virginia.
As a matter of fact, 15 states have a lower population than the amount of trans folks in the U.S.
So here are a few things to keep in mind.
You don't always know when a person is trans.
But we're your neighbors,
your co-workers,
your students,
your customers,
and even your friends and family.
We exist in every culture, todas las culturas,
throughout human history.
And while we're more visible than ever before,
sometimes you just don't see us.
So when you hear about politicians pushing for discriminatory bills,
know this. These bills address problems that aren't even real.
Problems that don't actually exist.
But we do.
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 And we need your support.
You are tuned to KBOO Portland.